Okay, we're on page 432, Pasuk 28, Chav Ches. Last thing we were learning last week was about not cursing a judge, not cursing, God forbid, Hashem, the respect you're supposed to have to a Nasi, to a leader, and so on. Okay, now the continuation of it, the next Pasuk says as follows. Mleyadcha v'dimacha le'isa'acher. You should not delay your fullness offering. We'll soon exactly see what this means. Your fullness offering or your priestly heave offering. You're not allowed to delay. Bechar banecha titanli, give me your firstborn sons. Now this pasuk, we'll see the connection between this and this. But basically, the pasuk over here is saying a halacha that there are certain tithings supposed to, so to speak, that you have to give the Kohanim, the Levium, you have to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Torah says two things. Number one, you're not allowed to delay bringing it. In other words, you have to bring it by a certain time. And if not, you're transgressing this negative commandment. And in addition, the Pasuk means, according to what the way Rashi explains it, that a person has to give it in the proper order. For instance, there's a mitzvah to give Bikurim, the first fruits from the seven Minim, they bring to Yerushalayim. It's a whole procedure. You have to give Truma. You have to give Meiser. There's different types of Meiser. There's Meiser Rishon. There's Meiser Sheni. There's Meiser Ani. There's a whole bunch of different orders of tithing. What the Torah is saying over here is that they have to be given in the proper order. You're not allowed to give Meiser before Truma. You're not allowed to give Bikurim before, you have to give Bikurim before Truma. So basically, as Rashi explains from the Gemara, that the first thing a Jew separates in the field is Bikurim. Then he gives Truma. And we'll discuss in a second which one. Then you take Maaser Rishon. Then you do Maaser Sheni or Maaser Ani. Okay? Now, Bikurim are, like we said, the first fruits of the fruits that Eretz Yisrael is praised with. You know, Chita, Sarah, Geffen, and Seinevi, those seven fruits. When the person comes into the field, he sees the first fruits ripening. He ties a thread around it to know these were the first fruits. Eventually, you take those first fruits. There's a certain amount that you have to give, and you bring it to Yerushalayim, you give it to the Kohanim. It belongs to the Kohanim. Then there's a concept called Truma. Truma is what you have to give also to a Kohen. Now, the Gemara says that biblically, there's no amount for Truma. One kernel of wheat is good for the whole barn full, for the whole silo full. One kernel is enough. But the Chachamim gave a shir. How much truma should you give? So by truma, it's interesting, the Chachamim gave three amounts. If you're nice, average, or cheap. No, that's what Gemara says. Gemara says, a nice guy, nice and bad in Yafe, a 40th. Average guy, 1/50th. And a cheap guy, 1/60th. So in other words, when you have to give truma to the Kohen, how much truma do you have to give to the Kohen? So Caesar, let's say average is 1/50th. So that's an average person gives, meaning from every 100 bushels, you give 2 bushels to the Kohen. So basically, let's say, for argument's sake, you have 100 bushels growing that year. Okay, so you have to give X amount Bikurim, so let's leave that out. Then you take from the 100, let's say, you give 1/50th, so you take 2 bushels, and you give it to the Kohen. Now you're left with 98. So from that 98, you have to tithe 10% and give it to the Levium. Now when it comes to the Meiser, there is, in the Torah agriculture, there's a 7-year cycle. Okay, because Shemitah is the 7th year when nothing grows. So basically, the agricultural mitzvahs you do every 6-year cycle. Right? 6 years, and then the 7th year you let it rest, and then you start again another 6 years. So Bikurim is every year, Truma is every year, Maaser 10% to the Levium, that's every year. Now you have 2 more Maasers, Maasers to speak correctly, Maaser Sheni, and Maaser Ani. So meaning as follows. The first year of the 6 years, you give Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. Second year, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. The third year, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Ani. And again, the next 3 years is the same thing. Maisa Rishon, Maisa Sheni, Maisa Rishon, Maisa Sheni, Maisa Rishon, Maisa Ani. Now, what is the difference between these three things? Maisa Rishon, you take 10% of what's left over after giving Truma, and you have to give it to the Levium. That's, you know, how the Levium used to make a living, basically, because they didn't work, they didn't own land. How did the Kohanim and Levium? So the Kohanim got their gifts in the Beis Hamikdash, they got Truma, they got a whole bunch of stuff. The Levium basically got 10% of their of your field, which was left after Truma, you gave to the Levium. From that, the Levi had to separate 10% and give it to the Kohen. So basically, if there were 100 bushels, and the Levi got, let's say, 10, whatever, and he ended up with 9. But that's from one person. In 1 second. So Maisa Rishon is given to the Levi. Maisa Sheni was brought from the 6 years, we're dividing it to two now, 3 and 3. First, second, fourth, and fifth is Maisa Rishon and Maisa Sheni. Third and sixth year is Maisa Rishon and Maisa Ani. Now, what is Maisa Sheni? Maisa Sheni means you take another 10% of your earnings, but it belongs to you. What do you have to do with it? You have to take it, bring it to Yerushalayim, and eat it there. Now, it's the Israelites, it's the Israels. The Torah says, you have to take it and eat it in Yerushalayim. What happens if it's too much to carry? Guy was a wealthy farmer, you know, they didn't have trains in those days. So the Torah says, you redeem it for cash. You take the cash to Yerushalayim, and it has to be spent in Yerushalayim for food things. Maaser Ani was 10% of your crop, you have to give it to the poor people. Now it's interesting, the Gemara says, that when Ezra went up with the Jews from Golas Bavel, from the exile of Bavel, to build the second Beis HaMikdash, okay, Ezra built the second Beis HaMikdash, when he went up to build the second Beis HaMikdash, the Levium didn't want to go with him. The Levium were like, not that great in those days. They didn't want to go back to Eretz Yisrael. So Ezra fined the Levium. And that's it, you don't get Maaser anymore. It goes to the Kohanim. So even Maaser, the Levium, at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, didn't get. So it all went to the Kohanim. So basically, what the Torah is explaining in this Pasuk is, M'le'yascho v'demacho le'isa acher. As Rashi says, the Torah is teaching us two things. Number one, you're not allowed to delay it. And you have to, secondly, you have to give him in the proper order. First comes Bikurim, then comes Truma.
This applies only for the field, for people who have fields.
Right. The guy had a real estate business. But don't forget, in Israel, in those days, it was an agricultural country. That's what they had. There wasn't anything else.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Was Aaron the first Kohen in the Yiddish history?
Yeah.
How come?
Aaron?
Was Adam the first person?
Yeah.
How come?
Because he was the first person.
So Aaron was the first Kohen?
Who made him a Kohen?
God.
Oh, really?
Not me.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
When the ladies, they make challah, and that piece that they take to...
Years ago, that used to go to the Kohen. A Kohen was given throughout Chumash. It was Chav Dalid Matnas Kohuna. There are 24 gifts that a Kohen got. There are gifts from the Kabanis. There are gifts from the agricultural things. The first shearings of wool. I mean, there's a lot of things the Kohenim got. And that's how the Kohenim made a living, and that's how the Levium made a living. Because they didn't own land, they didn't work in the fields.
But the amount that you're taking out is not like you cheap, you rich, you...
If you're rich, you give more. If you're poor, you give less.
Right now.
Challah was a certain size of the dough. Reish said he say sechem. The first piece of dough you had to give to the Kohen. Because we don't know today who's real Kohanim or not, and we're all Tameh, so we take it and burn it. Because you're not... One second. I would say I'm older than you, but I don't know. Now...
I don't think so.
Okay. We won't argue. There's two issues involved in all these things. Number one, there's what allows you to eat your grain, and then there's a second issue of giving it to a kohen. There's two things involved. Before you separate anything, you're not allowed to eat it. If you don't separate bikurim, truma, ma'aser, you're not allowed to eat your grain. So when you give it to the kohen, or separate it at least for the kohen, two things happen. By separating it, number one, you now are allowed to eat your grain, or challah, let's say. And then there's a second mitzvah, giving it to the kohenim or to the levium. Okay? Now, there's what's called, and there's a whole argument in the Gemara, if is it called money or not. I have to give 10% to the Levi. That doesn't mean, though, a Levi can come to my house and grab it and say, I am a Levi, I got it. I can give it to the Levi of my choice. Mm-hmm. I can give it to the Kohen of my choice. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, when I bring a carbon, it went to the Kohen that was on the shift that week. But like my grain of tithing it or mice or truma, granted it's not mine, I have to give it to the Kohen of the Levi, but the Torah gives me the option of giving it to the Kohen of my choice. And therefore, that itself is a question in the Gemara, is that considered money or not? Mm-hmm. Is that valuable, intangible money? For instance, I said before, I have to give it to a Levi, but I can give it to the Levi of my choice. What happens if a Levi comes and grabs it? Or a Kohen comes and grabs it? The din is, they keep it. The only question is, do they have to pay me the value of my option that I can give it to the Kohen of my choice? Is that considered money or not? And that's an argument in the Gemara, if it is money or it isn't money. But here again, without going into all the laws of Terumah, Semaisis, the Torah is basically saying that you have to give it. So for instance, nowadays, just to finish with this, when a woman bakes challah, and she bakes enough flour that you need to separate challah, you're not allowed to eat that dough, that challah, until you separate challah. Right. So by separating it, now you can eat the dough. But now the question, who's a kohen? We don't know today who is a chazaka being a real kohen. So therefore, what do? We take and we burn it.
So the amount you're taking out...
It has to be a kezias. It has to be a decent amount.
But if you have someone with a coin next week, can you give him...
No. Challah, you don't give.
No, the dough or the coin to
eat. No, I'm saying today, you don't give it to a coin, you burn it. But there's a difference between... While we're off the subject anyway, there's a difference today between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Which, by the way, is a very interesting halachic difference between Eretz Yisrael dekechala and our, I don't mean, I'm not talking about how it's made. I'm talking about the mitzvah of separating challah between here and Israel. In Israel, you're not allowed to eat the challah until you separate challah. In Chutz La'aretz, technically, you can eat and leave over at the end challah. You can eat and leave over at the end challah. But in Israel, today even, you're not allowed to eat it before. I'll give you an example which can happen very often. Not in today in the bakeries, it's a different story. But what happens if a woman baked challah in Israel? She baked challah and she forgot to separate challah. You know, the piece. Come Shabbos. She has a lot of beautiful challahs, but she didn't separate challah yet. Mm-hmm. So the shad is, can she separate challah on Shabbos? So the halacha is, no, you're not allowed to. Why? Because you're making unedible edible. Mm-hmm. It's called mesakin mona. You're fixing on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So you're stuck. You can't eat the challahs on that Shabbos. What happens in Chutz La'aretz? If somebody forgot to separate challah, it's no problem. You can eat the challah, and you just have to leave over one piece at the end of the whole challah, which goes to the kohen.
Why is the difference?
Because there's a lot of difference if it's minatayim and rabbanon. Now, there's also another interesting halacha that happens. It happened here once in the school, and it happens in people's houses, believe it or not. They have, let's say, a bunch of kids making challah, and they separate a piece of dough as the challah.
Uh-huh.
and they put it off at the side, and by mistake somebody takes it and mixes it back with all the other stuff. So now you have in your whole dough, you have challah.
Or it's 1/60th.
No, it's not about the 1/60th. So there's a whole procedure that you have to do. You need to have a bezdin. And you have to be matur neder, because challah is like a vow. So you have to undo the vow that you made of separating challah. And then you make it back into regular dough. And then you remake the challah. But you have to make it, you have to unchallah it to be able to...
Before baking, or even...
Doesn't matter.
So the lady in Israel cannot eat the challah
for Shabbat. No, the man also can't.
But they can't say hamutzi. So what is it, which is worse, to lose a berachol hamutzi and berikat hamazon?
Go to a neighbor and eat.
So Rabbi, in Israel, in the first case, he said, what if they don't have any challahs for Shabbat?
That's what he asked.
Oh,
go to a neighbor. Then it's cheaper. It's cheaper. You go to the neighbor. Yeah. That's his problem. It's not my problem what he's going to eat. Okay. So this is... Okay.
Say it again.
One.
This Maaser Rishon, which is 10%, we take out, we give it to the Kohen.
No, Levi. Then from what's left, you take... For what's left, you take Maaser Sheni,
which is 10%
of what's left, and then Maaser Oni, or Maaser Sheni, or Maaser Oni, depending which year it is.
And both of them, Sheni goes to the...
Sheni, no. Maaser Sheni, you take yourself to Yerushalayim and eat it. It's yours.
Okay.
You eat it. Except the only limitation is you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. Okay? Now, you can give it to whoever you want. Therefore, the Gemara says, in Yerushalayim, a guy lived 40 miles out of Yerushalayim, right? And he had to schlep all his Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim, right? See, what is he going to stay there for a month? He didn't stay there for a month.
Give it to everybody,
yeah. No, they sold it for cheap. Supply and demand. So people that lived in Yerushalayim used to buy from other people's Maaser Sheni for cheap. Maaser Sheni sale. No, because you can only eat it, anybody could eat it, but only in Yerushalayim. So the people that lived in Yerushalayim, they bought it for cheap, supply and demand, and the guy, you know, but it was his. Maaser only have to get to the poor people. Maaser, interesting. Maaser Rishon that goes to the Levi, but there's no holiness in it. In other words, it's the Levi's. If the Levi wants to give it to Yisrael, he has no problem. Truma, only a Kohen is allowed to eat. If a Yisrael or a Levi eat Truma, it's Misa B'dei Shemayim. Hashem kills you. It's death. But Truma is holy because it goes to the Kohen. Maaser is owned by the Levi, but it's not holy. Once the Levi owns it, he can give it to whoever he wants. Yisrael, you know, anybody. And Maaser Sheni also was not holy. The limitation was that it had to be eaten only in Yerushalayim.
What? Nobody eats the challah, nobody's kohanim is not allowed to eat it.
No.
So the really wealthy guy who lives near Yerushalayim would sell it, take the money, go buy, and then sell it again? You were saying if a really wealthy person.
He had to redeem it.
Had so much that
let's say he had $1,000 worth of maaser.
Right.
So he took sold it for $1,000.
Right.
So now this money became Maaser.
Right.
So he goes to Yerushalayim, he has to spend the money in Yerushalayim.
Oh, he just has to spend it, but it has to be spent on food.
Right? Well, anything the personal need, yeah, right. You can't buy real estate.
But if he lives near Yerushalayim, so he's not going to stay for a month to eat it, he can then turn around and sell it.
Sell it for cheap, yeah.
That was just around, so on Friday night when we cut that little challah at the end, is that because of the challah?
No, it's because you don't want to eat the end. It makes you forget. Okay, so then the pasuk continues and says, "Kein tasa, so you should do." Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped the important part. B'char b'necha titan li, you have to give your firstborn sons to me. This is the mitzvah, as we know, of pigin aben. That you have to redeem the firstborn when the child is 31 days old, and this is a mistake a lot of people make. They think a pigin aben is on the 30th day. Pinyin Ben is on the 31st day. The baby has to have an established life, a chazakah, of being alive for 30 days. And then on the 31st day, you have to give it to the Kohen or redeem it. You have to redeem it, actually, for 5 sloim, which is approximately, in today's language, 101 grams of silver. The value of 101 grams of silver, whatever that is. So it doesn't have to be money, it could be something valuable of 101 grams of silver, which is 5 shekels, 5 sloim. Okay, this is... Chamesh is silver.
Value.
Who wants to pay gold?
Especially now.
That's interesting, Shaila. What happens if the father says to the Kohen, you know, keep the kid, I don't want to pay the money. You're not allowed to do it.
You are or you're not?
You're not. For a lot of reasons, but something, you might get locked up for child abuse, but besides that, the mitzvah, you have to redeem it. You can't just keep
Rabbi,
it.
Rabbi, what page are you on here?
432. Okay, now we're up to Pasuk Chavtes, Pasuk 29. Kein tase l'sharcho l'tzeinecho, so should you do to your ox, to your sheep. What does it mean? We'll see the connection between all these psukim. Means, shivas yamim yihya im imei, the animal should be 7 days with its mother. Bayem ashmine titnei li, on the 8th day, you're allowed to give it as a korban. Meaning, what the Torah is saying, it doesn't mean you have to give it to me on the 8th day. What the Torah means is like this. If you want to give an animal as a korban, you cannot bring it until the animal is at least 8 days old. That's what it means. As Rashi explains, it's not a chayv that you have to give it that way. It means, meyei mashmini vahola. Meaning, any time onward, you're allowed to give it as a korban, but if you want to do it, the animal, you cannot bring as a sacrifice until the animal is 8 days old. Now, what does it mean? Kein tase l'sharcho l'tzeinecho. What do you mean, so you should do 7 days, and it's not... So it means like this. The Torah, by just saying these statements, the Torah is alluding to a number of dinim. Number one, there is a concept of redeeming a firstborn animal also. If you have a firstborn animal, you have to give it to the Kohen. It's brought as a korban. As we say every morning in davening, Habchor v'maisa v'pesach, kachi kalim, you have to give it to the Kohen. You have a firstborn animal, you have to give it to the Kohen. Okay? Now, the Torah says, what does it mean? The Torah just got through saying, you have to redeem your firstborn son, and then the Torah says, so should you do to your animal. So what the Gemara learns, just like a baby boy, the firstborn, is redeemed on the 31st day, the same thing, animals are also redeemed on the 31st day. But the Gemara says that's only the small animals, like sheep. Big animals, like cows and oxen, bulls, you have to give it on the 50th day. You have to give it also, they learn out from Sukkim. The daka, meaning a small animal, like a sheep, that you give after 31 days. Be magasa, you have to give it after 50 days. That's the way the Gemara learns it out from Sukkim. Okay? Now, what is the Torah teaching us? What's the connection between all these various Sukkim? First, the Pasuk says, don't curse your judge. And then the Pasuk says, you'll make sure you give your produce on the right time. And then it says, give me your firstborn animals. Like, what's the whole connection between this? So he says like this. Many times, a person goes to a court, they lose the case, they curse the judges. So therefore, the God says like this, you better not curse the judge, because God's going to tell you, if you curse the judge, you're going to end up cursing your own produce. Okay? He said, you're going to Shabbaven Kililas Adayanim, the Gemara says, because you curse judges, God says, I'm not giving you produce. So therefore, you won't be able to give bikurim, you won't be able to do all these mitzvahs. Okay? And then, it comes from that to, by not giving, if you're going to be doing the produce, truma, maizes, and all that, then Hashem will give you all the other gifts also. He'll give you animals to every firstborn, redemption, and all that. So these are the sequence of the psukim over here. And then the Torah says basically, on the eighth day, you have to give it, you're allowed to give it as a korban. The Gemara learns though, that preferable is to wait 30 days before you give a korban.
30 days after what?
30 days after it's born. Which means like this. If a guy sanctified an animal as a korban, if it's less than 7 days old, it's not really valued yet as a hegdish, because it's not kosher to be a korban. After 8 days, if you say this animal is hegdish, say guy says this animal is consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash, then you can't use the milk of the animal, because the milk belongs to hegdish. If it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to use things that belong to the temple. It's punishable by death if it's intentional. If you do it accidentally, you have to pay principal plus a fifth plus a korban. So, but the best time to bring a korban, the Gemara says, is after 30 days. To bring it actually as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash.
Like, if you have a bupa of sadaqah in your home and you put money in it, is that like considered like consecrated to Hashem?
Not to Hashem, but you're not allowed to use it. And if you use it, you can only borrow it. You have to pay it back. Oh. Okay, next pasuk. Ba'anchi kedush pasuk lamed. Ba'anchi kedush ti yunli. The Torah says you should be holy people for me. Baser basado trefa le'sechelu. Meat that's in the field, which is torn apart. I'll explain this whole pasuk. It's a very interesting pasuk. Trefa le'sechelu. You're not to eat trefa meat, which is found in the field. La'kelev tashlicha ne'sa. You have to give it to the dogs. So this pasuk says two things. Or three things, really. God says you should be holy to me. Secondly, don't eat what's called trefa meat. It's not the English word trefa. When you say they eat trefe, that's not what it means here. And the third thing is, what do you do with it? You throw it to the dogs. So the Mefarshim explained as follows. The Anche Kedish, the pasuk simply means it should be holy for me. The pasuk says, the Anche Kedish, if you're people of holiness, then tihi unli, then you're mine, God says. And if you're not holy, then you're not mine. Now, the Torah prefaced this to the din basically of not eating non-kosher meat. There is, and I know in America, when you actually want to say something's not kosher, it's either kosher or treif. It's like, when people, they have these expressions from, it's very interesting, have nothing to do with the real word treifa. Now, trefa literally means an animal that was torn at. Taraf in Hebrew means ripped apart. When you shecht meat, there is what's called nevela, and there's trefa. Nevela means an animal dies on its own. It wasn't shechted, it wasn't slaughtered. Or it was not a kosher shechita. It was not a kosher shechting. In any case, when an animal died or was killed or shot or whatever, if the animal is not shechted and it dies, that is called nevela. Nevela means a dead carcass of an animal. The dead carcass of an animal that wasn't shechted, you're not allowed to eat. Finished. Then there's a second thing, and that is called trefa. Trefa, and this is one of the things that used to get tested on a lot for smicha, and he goes through all the various many, many laws in Shulchan Aruch and complicated laws, what trefa means. Trefa literally means an animal that was torn apart, like the two animals got into a fight and one animal ripped the other one apart. Trefa, in a broader sense, refers to any illness or blemish that an animal has that it would not be able to live a year. Then, even if you shecht the animal properly, it could be 100% kosher shechita. But the animal has something within it that you need, that the animal will not survive for a year. It's called a trefa, and you're not allowed to eat it. Now, what most people are aware of, like we know that when you shecht an animal, more than a chicken, because a chicken has less complications than an animal, the shechet has to check the lungs, and you have to check the stomach, and you have to check the various parts of the animal. What are you checking for? You're checking for countless blemishes that would render the animal treifa, that even though you shechted it properly, and it was 100% kosher shechita, you're not allowed to eat it. And therefore we know, what is a mashgiach in a, not in a butcher shop, but actual in the slaughterhouses, where they do the shechita, they have to go through the animal and make sure there's no holes, and there's no broken bones, and there's no missing things, and there's no blemished things, and there's no growths, all the various complications, and therefore, a shechet, if you see always an acronym for a shechet, they call it shub, shin vav beis, which stands for shochet ubodek. Not only do they have to shecht, but sometimes it's even more important than the shechita. Harder than the shechita is actually to do a bedika. And they have to stick their hands inside the animal. I mean, you know, check the lungs, you know, as everybody knows. And this is where you get the concept of what's called glatt, not glatt. Contrary to American belief, glatt doesn't mean very. Glatt kosher, very kosher, very, the glatt kosher. Glatt kosher milk. I mean, glatt means smooth. That's the definition of glatt. Glatt is a Yiddish word that means smooth. What is the definition of glatt? The biggest problem most of the times by animals is the lungs. Because a lot of times there's growths on the lungs. Some growths come off very easily. Some growths on the lung don't come off easily. When the lung of the animal is completely smooth, that there are no growths, is called glatt. And even within glatt, there are different categories of glatt. There are certain growths that come off very easily, which according to many opinions is called glatt anyway, because it came off easily. And certain things are not glatt, certain things render the animal not kosher. Certain things render the animal kosher, but it's not glatt kosher, meaning it's not 100% smooth. And it says that the Beis Yosef, the Sfarad community, is really more strict than glatt, because the Beis Yosef is more machmir in the definition of glatt than the Ramah is, whom the Ashkenazic follow. So that's what you find in the butcher, so it says Beis Yosef glatt, or in Hebrew it's called cholok, which is the Hebrew for smooth. Beis Yosef shchita, or Beis Yosef cholok, or glatt, or not Beis Yosef glatt, just to be aware of the languages. So the Torah says, in glatt. A lot of the Chassidish Shechitas are machmer like the Beis Yosef anyway, but I'm saying in just in the halacha itself. So the Torah says, V'anzei kedesh tiyudni, u'bose basoda treifa leisechelu. It says, meat that's in the field, that's treifa. And Rashi says it doesn't only mean in the field. Even if in your house it's not, if it's a treifa, it has a disease that will kill it in a year. You can't eat it anyway. But the Torah speaks in the more common terms. Where is an animal more often torn apart? In the fields than in the house. But the same din applies to the house. So basically the Torah is teaching us a number of aspects over here. Number one, the Torah is teaching us that if you want to be holy, you have to be very careful and cautious. That's the connection over here. It says, Anshei Kedesh Tihiyun Li, you should be holy for me. Don't eat treif. Basically, now, people say the word treif for anything not kosher. Okay, but that became an expression. Treif actually only refers to meat that has a disease that it won't live for a year. But because that's not kosher, we say anything is treif. Okay, but really it only applies to animals which are being torn apart, or animals that have diseases and can't live for a year. So even though the shechita is done properly, you're not allowed to eat the animal.
What does the lung have to do with the rest of the body of the animal?
It's not only the lung. The lung is the primary troublemaker, is the lung.
So if the lung is very smooth, then the rest of the body of the animal...
No, they have to check the other rest of the body animal. I'll give you an example. What happens if an animal swallows a needle? But they eat off the ground, right? Now the needle can cause a hole in the stomach. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of complicated laws. Did he go through the fats? Is it through and through? Is it not? So a guy has to just check through the animal and see if there's something in the brain of the animal.
But the guy who's checking is just checking the lungs.
He doesn't check only the lungs. He checks the whole animal.
Okay. Yeah. When they take all of the blood out, he puts his hand in the
cavity of the animal and they go through a check.
Go to the lungs. The lungs, if the lungs is okay or whatever it is, then go to the rest of them. Otherwise,
now, what's the connection between being holy and kosher, basically? So the answer is very simple. One of the uniquenesses of the mitzvah of kosher is, in a certain respect, more than any other mitzvah. Because let's say I speak Lashon Hara, which is coming up in the Pasuk or two. You speak Lashon Hara, my mouth is sinning. My stomach is not sinning. My hand is not sinning. My foot is not sinning. When I do a mitzvah with my hand, I put on tefillin, or I give tzedakah. So basically, my hand is doing the mitzvah. Kashrus affects the entire person. Because when we eat food, the food turns into blood and flesh. As it says, the expression becomes damu basa kipsari, it becomes blood and flesh. So the entire growth of the person, the entire blood and flesh of the person, depends on what you eat. And therefore, the Torah, when it comes to the sanctity of the Jewish people, and this is, you know, sometimes you hear people that are not religious, they have this misconception. If it's good enough for a guy, why can't it be good enough for a Jew? It's not unhealthy. You know, people think kashrus has to do with health. Kashrus has nothing to do with health. People say, yeah, in the desert they had no refrigeration, so therefore it had to be healthy, but today it doesn't apply. Besides the fact that Rashi says this is a chayk, it's exeris hakosev in Parshas Bishalach, Rashi says it's an illogical mitzvah. But the concept of kashrus is, as you are what you eat, meaning you become what you eat. And even science lately found out that when you eat animals that have a tendency of ripping other animals apart, you get that tendency within you. You know, you get the tendencies of the food that you eat. So therefore, when a person is supposed to keep kosher, it has nothing to do with the physical health of the food. A Jew, because they're holy, they have a neshama, they're holy. Hashem says, for your level of holiness, your body needs only kosher food. Now, if you ask somebody in the street, what does the word kosher mean? Think about it, what does the word kosher mean? Kosher means fit. It's mukhshar. It's fit for a Jew to eat. That's the definition of the word kosher. So, the Torah says, because you are holy, because you're holy, therefore the Torah says, "Basa basada treifa le'sechelu." You're not allowed to eat anything which is basically, as far as animals go, at least treifa. You have to be able to eat only kosher food. For a guy, there's absolutely nothing wrong eating a cheeseburger, eating a pig chazer steak, or whatever. For a Jew, it's poison because the Torah says, for the kedusha of a Jew, it's no good. What?
If a person eats from a kosher animal, like beef, but it's not shechted properly.
That's another sin.
No, I'm saying, is it an additional sin of not shechting properly? Or, in other words...
No, then it's only that sin of nevela. A Jew is not allowed to eat a nevela either. A carcass of an animal that wasn't shechted, a Jew is not allowed to eat. Treifa takes it a step further, even if it was shechted. But the animal is a treifa, then you're not allowed to eat it either.
But it's a kosher animal.
Right. For instance, we learned before that Sefer Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzahs, according to all opinions, must be written on parchment of a kosher animal, but it doesn't have to be a shechted animal. The Gemara said, I feel it from the velus of treifas, as long as the animal is kosher. I'll give you another difference. Because both are treif. An animal that died on its own, that wasn't shechted, you can't eat. And an animal that was treifa, you can't eat. Right? You can't eat it anyway. But there's differences in halacha between the two. For instance, a nevela, you could write nevela, a cow that died. Just was shot, whatever. You could take the hide and make parchment out of it for tefillin. There's another interesting difference, we're discussing it today between Mincha Ma'ariv, and that is meat and milk, you're not allowed to benefit from. It's a pasuk later on in this parsha of Mishpatim. You're not allowed to, when it comes to meat and milk, the Torah says three psukim, the same pasuk three times. Lo tevashel gadi b'chalev imo. You're not allowed to cook a goat in its mother's milk. The Torah says it three times. Which teaches us, why does the Torah say the same thing three times? So the Gemara learns out, one is no cooking, one is no eating, and one is no benefiting. A Jew is not allowed to cook meat and milk even if they're not going to eat it. It says clearly, lo yisevashu gadi, you're not allowed to cook it. You're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to benefit from it. The halacha is, if I give you an example, whenever you have dog food. If you have a dog, you have to feed a dog food, unless you only feed it glatt kosher meat, but you have to feed a dog food. Now, many dog foods, if you look in the ingredients, have milk solids and meat and cheese and a lot of trefil things. So the question, you can't not only can you not eat it, but you can't benefit from it. And if you feed it to your dog, you're benefiting from it, so you're not allowed. But the din is, when is basar v'cholav forbidden to benefit from? Number one, it doesn't apply to chicken, because chicken is not b'chalev imo. Meat and chicken, milk and chicken is only rabbinically forbidden. But another thing is, that it's only if it's kosher meat, not shechted meat, kosher animals mixed with milk. But what happens if somebody mix pig and milk? You're allowed to benefit from it.
You can give it to your dog.
You can give it to you. You can't eat it, but you can give it to your dog.
You can cook it together.
You cannot cook it. Yeah. No, but you can benefit from it.
Can you repeat the last one?
You can benefit. You can pig and milk. You can benefit from.
Because it's non-kosher meat.
Right. But if it's kosher animal, even though it wasn't shechted, so you're not allowed to eat it anyway, but it's a kosher meat, you cannot put it with milk and benefit from it.
It's kosher food for dogs?
Huh?
It's kosher dog
food. They have kosher dog food. I mean, not with a hechsher, but they have dog food that's not right.
What about veal?
Veal? What's wrong with veal? Young, so there's less problem of glut on it. I'm not a butcher, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't, you're asking me about veal. I don't know. I know what veal is, but how old it is, I don't know.
No, she's trying to ask you a question.
Thank you. What would I do without you?
Can we use veal? If it's
proper shechita, yeah. They sell kosher proper.
Milk.
Not with milk. You can't have it with your coffee. Unless you have a pair of a coffee.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they sell veal. No, I didn't. I didn't understand what. What?
Less than a year.
Doesn't matter. You can shecht an animal as soon as it's born.
Even before it's born.
No.
I said if it has an illness, that the Chachamim. That the Chachamim established that with this illness it would not live for a year, then you can't eat shecht it and eat it. So not that the animal's a year old.
Okay, what about
and the halacha is, by the way, it's totally irrelevant to what science says. The Torah says it's completely irrelevant. The Rambam says it doesn't matter if people will prove that today you can live with it's totally irrelevant. This is what the Chachamim said. If it has this illness, it won't live for a year, and therefore it has a din of a treifa. But if the animal is checked and it's healthy, right, that means it would be able to live for a year. Not that it has to live for a year. It could technically live for a year. So then...
Okay, so for chicken, it's not that the halacha of glut, right?
What do you mean? For chicken, you're right. There's no... again, people call glatt very kosher. Yeah. That's what that. But glatt really has nothing to do with very kosher. Glatt means that the lungs are smooth. When somebody says you can eat the milchiks in my house, it's glatt kosher. Okay.
Chicken can be glatt kosher,
isn't it? Chicken is b'chlal glatt. It's not a problem. There's other problems with chicken.
No, they don't check the lungs
of
chicken.
No.
Isn't it?
There's a lot of... You have to learn Yadadeya. There's a lot...
But chicken has to be checked too.
Of course. I'll tell you a little secret from the Rambam. The Poskim write that from the Rambam... The implication from the Rambam is that even fish, the shechita of a fish is taking it out of the water.
Uh-huh.
They bring, according to the Rambam, from the Rambam's way the Rambam describes it, the Rambam seems to imply that like a fish would need shechita, but removing it from the water, that itself is a shechita.
What about
Malika? That's only in the Beis Hamikdash. Now, what happens? What's the connection? Or the Mefarshim ask a very simple grammatical question. It says, "Ubase basada treifa leisechelu." Whoever knows Hebrew, even I know this amount of Hebrew. Treifa is feminine and masculine. Mm-hmm. So then it should have said, "Lakelav tashlichun oisa." Why does it say Lakelev Tashlichun Oisai, which is masculine? If you're talking about Treifa, Treifa is feminine. So it should say Oisa. So they learn out from here that a person who is dishonest and feeds Jews Treifa meat is worthy of being thrown to the dogs. So Oisai goes on the person. Basa basada Treifa leisechelu, and if you do, meaning a butcher who sells treifa meat intentionally, Lakelev Tashlichun Oisai, he's worthy of being, and they bring down a Yerushalmi. Mamleis brings down an interesting story in Yerushalmi. There was a butcher, a sheikhet, in the time of the Gemara, that gave the impression of being very religious, but he wasn't, and he was feeding Jews treifa meat. And the story is, one time Erev Yom Kippur, the guy got drunk by mistake, or whatever, and he went up to the roof to get fresh air, and he was so drunk, he fell off the roof and died. And all of a sudden, the dogs were coming, and they were licking his blood and everything. So they came to Rav Chanina, who was one of the Tanoim of the Mishnah. They came to Rav Chanina, and they said, maybe we should take away the body from there, that the dogs shouldn't eat him. And he said, no, the Torah says, a person like this is worthy, I'm sure, he gave treifa meat, and that's why the dogs are eating him. So let him be there.
So nobody knew that he had given
treifa? No, nobody knew.
But he just assumed that he had given treifa meat?
He was a great tzaddik, he knew. So,
it's all assuming.
But the rabbis didn't assume anything.
Ruach HaKodesh?
Do
people get aware of that
as treifa meat from this? Yeah, well, a lot has to do, they get punished for it. One second. One second. The question now is, why? Relax. I didn't hear what you said yet. The question.
You don't answer me.
Right. The Torah is saying, you have to give it to the dogs. Now, why do you give it to the dogs?
Because
one sec. So there's two answers. The Daskin Balatesis brings out an interesting answer. He says, because when you go hunting, how do they get the animals? They used to go into the field and hunt them. So the dogs, because when the wolf would come to rip the, fight with the animals, that's what the wolves used to do. They used to have watchdogs to get rid of the wolves. So because the dogs didn't allow the animal to become treifa, become ripped apart by the wolf, so therefore the Torah says, give him its reward. That in the case, when there's an avela, feed it to the dogs. So there's another, but Rashi gives a different answer. The Gemara, the real famous answer, what everybody was saying, is that when the Jews left Egypt, it says, the dogs didn't bark, the dogs didn't make noise. And to reward the dogs, so Hashem said, when you have a dead carcass of an animal, feed it to the dogs to reward them over the fact that they... So the world asks a very interesting question. But it's not the same dogs. Those dogs were 3,000 years ago. These are different dogs. Why should I reward a dog today because of something that his great grandfather did? So the answer is what's called yichus, lineage. So they say it's a proof that lineage belongs to the dogs. People have their own schus, not the... For dogs, lineage is good. But the lesson over here is that Hashem rewards everybody and everything for the good they do. So a person should keep in mind that if Hashem is so kind that even to reward dogs for a small little thing, so they didn't bark. You know, big deal, they didn't bark. Yet, Hashem in Chumash in a few places rewards the dogs by saying that you give them the dead carcass that you can't eat. By the way, the Torah doesn't say you have to give it to the dogs. Because in another pasuk later on in Chumash, the Torah says, "Eimachal nachri." You can either give it to the dogs, or you're allowed to sell it. Which, by the way, that's what the slaughterhouses do. Today, the kosher slaughterhouses, not every animal they shecht is kosher. Sometimes the shechita was no good, sometimes the animals are treifa. So what do? It's not forbidden to benefit from. You're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to sell it to a guy. If you want, you can give it to a dog. Basically, what the Torah is teaching us, you're allowed to benefit from it. So why does the Torah say, you know, just give, if you want, you can give it to a dog, to reward the dog. But there's no mitzvah that you have to give it to a dog. What the Torah basically is saying, you can sell it, you can give it to a dog, you're allowed to benefit from it.
But he has to be a kosher animal.
No.
It's a rape completely?
You can benefit from chazer.
Oh, okay.
You can have a football made out of pigskin. You can wear pigskin shoes, pigskin belt, pigskin blouse, pigskin dress, pants, shoes, yarmulke.
But you cannot raise. You cannot raise.
You're not allowed to raise pigs.
Rabbi.
One second. One.
How do you know that Hashem rewards the good of the Jews because we don't know?
Well, you see from the Torah that Hashem rewards us. Here in the pasuk, Hashem rewards the dogs. If He rewards the dogs, He rewards us. What?
Is it allowed to eat hunted food, hunted game?
No, it has to be slaughtered, it has to be shechted.
Then how come Yitzhak Rabinu said to Esav, go and hunt me some food?
Yeah, but if you notice in the Rashi over there, he says, V'tzu dalit zayid, he said, V'hochein, you have to shecht it. What they used to do, even the hunters in the olden times, they used to catch the animals and then they shechted them. Because if they shoot them dead, then you can't eat it. So all the hunters, they didn't have like today slaughterhouses and places where they raise animals. They used to go out into the fields and get the animals. So over there, they used to catch them. And then it was much harder because you couldn't even wound the animal because something wounding the animal would automatically make it treif.
Right.
So they had to figure out a way of catching it and, you know, but they didn't kill it. And he told them, go catch the animal and bring it to shechita.
All kosher animals are domestic anyway.
Well, technically a deer is a kosher animal. It's not domestic.
Giraffe.
A giraffe you can't. A giraffe is a problem. A giraffe is a kosher animal. The problem with a giraffe is where to shecht it. That's the problem.
And so the camel, you have to know the right hand.
A camel is treif.
Camel is treif.
There's one animal that you have. If you know the right hand and left hand.
Camel is treif.
A chazer has split hooves but doesn't chew its cud. And a camel chews his cud but doesn't have split hoofs. Okay, we'll continue the next time.